back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are getting our crab cake on this week. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour continues. We're going to be at Gunpowder Lodge with Danny Santoro. A little soccer, a little World Cup, all that, as well as probably a pretty decent lobster roll. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving away the Raven scratch-off tickets up in Kingsville. Come on by and see us between 2 and 5, as well as our friends at Window Nation, and of course, our friends at Goodwill. We're hoping you're doing your Halloween shopping. Like, this guy's coming on right now, and full disclosure, I love this guy. He's sort of like media family to me out in Clevelandia. He has his Guardians lid on. By the time you get this, they might be in, they might be out. They had rain delays. I thought when I booked him on, you know, middle of the week that the series would be over with, but it's like a cricket tournament, I think, this Guardians-Yankees thing. He is a right or wrong fan. You can find him out on the interweb. He has a new fancy podcast. You know, I remember old farts like us called it radio and all that. Now it's just podcasting. He is a Daryl Ryder, the defending champion of all things Cleveland. Dude, our team's not, it's almost like we're performing like the Browns. We're losing games that the Browns would be proud of losing, brother.
I have a feeling that Sunday's game has the potential to be epic, either in a very positive way or in the worst of ways, because both of these clubs colliding in Baltimore Sunday afternoon have a mountain of issues. I mean, between the Ravens giving away double-digit leads, the Browns giving away double-digit leads, can't cover anybody or tackle anybody. They got a quarterback all of a sudden now that's starting to turn the ball over, which is not a very good thing. So just this feels like this is the consolation bowl or something. Like, it's neither one of these teams is playing up to expectations.
Dude, somebody's got to win a division, right? I mean, at some point, someone will get to 10, I guess, when this is over with. I gave the Steelers up for dead a couple. I said they can't. And I gave the Browns up for, you know, they can't. And then you realize these teams play each other. And when these, and a lot of times these don't go the way that the records are supposed to go when the division teams get together for all sorts of reasons, including just preparing for each other and knowing you're trying to stop Lamar Jackson. He's not new in Cleveland the way he is when you see some NFC team once every 4 years, right? So, and you and I get together often. We get together a couple times a year and we sort of scrimmage these things as to the state of the franchise. I mean, I've talked to you so many times when the Browns have just been laughable, disgraceful, really disgraceful given where they are with the quarterback and the owner and all that. But just on the field, it feels to me like they can beat a team anytime. I mean, they're not in or out, and they, if the game stopped in the third quarter, they'd be 5-1. So that's not closing a game, and we have that here as well. But they're not this laughing stock, disgraceful. They're not a bad football team if they had a little bit more at the quarterback position, which is what they went out to do in the offseason. But they're capable of beating the Ravens, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, they could easily be 5-1 right now. They gave away the game to the Jets. They were up 30-17 with 1:55 on the clock. The defense completely fell apart, as did the special teams unit, and they ended up losing that game by one. They, you know, should have beaten the Atlanta Falcons down in Georgia. They gave that game away. They had the Chargers on the rope, and they gave that game away.
Missed a kick, right? I mean, you talk about our kicker, right?
Yeah, you know. And then last week against the Patriots, really, that was the first non-competitive game that they have played since, well, they played the Patriots last year and lost 45-7 up in Foxborough. But, you know, 4 turnovers and 24 points, they gave that game away too. So, look, the Cleveland Browns are a very generous team, and at some point, maybe their generosity will get rewarded with a few wins.
The Watson thing, where's the temperature and the sniff on that? Because, I mean, the fantasy is that they're going to be 5-6 or 6-5, and he can come to the rescue and add some special sauce after Thanksgiving or whatever. I don't know that you're going to make it up that mountain. And this is one of those games that sort of decides that fate. And, but where, what's the temperature on that amongst the fan base, that the guy coming to rescue, is it 26 now, the number of accusations on him, sexual assault?
Yeah, well, it's 26 civil lawsuits that have been filed. We're waiting to see if this latest one, a Texas judge ordered the plaintiff, the accuser, to submit her name with the filings. If she elects not to do that, then that suit will be tossed out, just like happened earlier this year with one of them. He has settled 23. He's back in the building, participating in team meetings. He's working out individually on his own in the weight room, and whatever he's doing on the field is on his own accord, because he is not permitted to do anything team related. In fact, he's not even allowed in the stadium as a ticket holder to watch the games. He's not even allowed in the building right now. So, but he'll be eligible to practice on November 14th. He is eligible for full reinstatement on November 28th. He will start December 4th at Houston against his former team, the Texans. And I have mentioned this, he could, and this is not to be flippant about it, but he could be sued by another 20 women in Texas, and it is going to have no effect on his eligibility to return on this current timeline, because as part of the settlement, remember, this was a disciplinary settlement. He originally was suspended for 6 games. The NFL appealed that. And then before appeal ruling was able to be handed down, they came to an agreement that he would sit 11 games out. He would pay a $5 million fine. The NFL, as well as the Cleveland Browns, would also pay $1 million each, along with Watson's fine. So $7 million in total going to various causes for the prevention of sexual assault and harassment and organizations that do that type of work nationwide. So,
man, you covered everything with football out there, Daryl.
Yeah, well, that's what we do here in Cleveland. I mean, football usually ends up being secondary, but as part of this agreement with the NFL, he's kind of, unless the accusations result in criminal proceedings or the accusations rise to a more severe level than where they are now, because pretty much all the stories are the same as far as those accusations go. And so there won't be anything that affects his eligibility again, unless it rises to the level of criminality or accusations of a much more severe nature occur. And to this point, they have not. In fact, this latest accusation, Deshaun Watson's defense team is arguing that they basically have plagiarized previous accusations, and they submitted paperwork to the court to basically support that claim as well. So, they are accusations. He's not admitted guilt. He has given a half-hearted apology for all of it. But he's going to be on the field December 4th.
Daryl Reuter is here from the land of Cleveland. Tell everybody about your podcast and all that good stuff that you got going on out there.
Yeah, it's always game day in Cleveland. Myself and my coworker and longtime friend Andy Baskin is my co-host, and it's a Browns podcast. We cover everything related to the Cleveland Browns, a little bit of a irreverent, humorous twist to some things at times as well. So it's not recommended listening for the Cleveland Browns organization. But if you're a fan of football, or if you're a nationwide fan of the Browns, feel free to give us a listen.
You can make the case for a 2-4 team to be 5-1 at the end of the third quarter. The Ravens could be 6-0, if not for blowing leads the last couple of weeks. And if Lamar dirts the ball and they punt and do normal things, kicking field goals when that would give you a lead at home, when you could put your defense on the field, just these crazy things against the grain. I know where this Ravens team is, and at any point it could be explosive. Lamar, Bateman might be back on the field. They're getting healthier. They're finding some pass rush here and again. They found this running back in Drake of Alabama, who's been around a little bit, and he looked like a professional running back on Sunday. So I can – Andrews is as good as anybody, right? Ronnie Stanley's even back on the field, which if we were playing you in week two, Ronnie Stanley was like a punchline here in week two. It was like he's never going to play. He's missed 31 of 32 games, right? He's played two games. He's playing. So I can make all of these pros and cons for the Ravens. They have done some things pretty well. Linebacking may not be their strength. Stopping the run, they were better this week. They're finding a semblance of a defensive line. If I'm coming on your show or your podcast and telling you I could upsell the Ravens. Oh, they have a really lousy schedule the rest of the way. They don't play a team with a winning record the rest of the way.
You are blessed.
dictated right now, right?
So the Browns have one of the toughest schedules the rest of the way. So they're pretty much cooked. Like if they don't win Sunday, I could make an argument that this season's over for the Cleveland Browns. But if they go to 2-5, good night. See y'all next year. Congratulations, Houston Texans, on your top 10 draft pick. I because the defense is a mess right now. If it's not one thing, it's another, whether it's blowing coverages, they use all kinds of fancy terminology. I just call them blown assignments. Okay. You're not doing your job. That's the cold, hard math. Whether you want to call it a miscommunication or a technique issue or whatever BS you want to throw out there. Bottom line is you're not doing your job on that side of the ball. And they've given up like 8 touchdowns this year because of that. They gave up one last week against New England because somebody wasn't where they were supposed to be and doing their job. I mean, they did this tackling. Now they can't tackle all of a sudden. So last week they spent all this time tackling. New England game comes, they still can't tackle. So this isn't a Jacoby Brissett issue. He had a terrible game against the Patriots, his worst game of the year. But he had been playing pretty well up until that point. And quite frankly, if you give me 5 good Jacoby Brissett starts off of against just one clunker, sign me up for that. Like, I'll take that over the next 6 weeks, another good 5 performances and one more clunker from him. I'm fine with that. But they are not 2-4 because of Jacoby Brissett. People that say that clearly have not been watching the Cleveland Browns. They fail to execute on special teams. Mike Prefer's unit, I don't know why the dude still has a job. They can't recover an onside kick. They're not good. Fair catching a punt right now is it's a reason to give them applause. They couldn't even line up to punt last week without getting a delay a game. Like the most easy thing to do, go out, line up for the punt and punt. They couldn't even do that. So there are a litany of issues. This offense, though, even with Jacoby out there, and we've talked over the years, Nestor, just how craptastic the Browns have been over those years where they would struggle to score 19 points a game. Look, they're scoring 25, 26, 27 points a game. Like, that's not a Jacoby Brissett problem. They're putting points on the scoreboard on a consistent basis. Obviously, just 15 points last week. But, you know, for the most part, they've been pretty consistent scoring the football. So, the list is long of the issues that the Browns are trying to fix in season. And I'm a believer that you can't fix stuff in the season. Like, you can't fix technique. You can't fix between the ears. You can't fix those type of things. You either know what you're doing or you don't when you get to the season. And right now, the Cleveland Browns defense, they look like a unit that doesn't have the first clue what they're doing out there.
Well, you know, part of this with Belichick bringing in players in season and starting that 15 years ago, even letting guys come in week 8, week 10. Chad Brown comes on my show all the time. He was one of those rent-a-hats that would get the phone call. We've seen Domata Pekka get the phone call. This year for the Ravens is JPP. This week it's DeSean Jackson, right? It was Dez Bryant before that. It's just none of these are solutions. They're more like band-aids, especially with the 30 plus group, but they do find a way to try to improve in season and say, we knew we didn't have linebackers coming into this. We knew we were one wide receiver injury or failure away from not having a 3, you know, and needing to go and find 35-year-old guys that were doing podcasts last week. So,
yeah, well, I mean, the Browns just did that too. They traded for Deion Jones, linebacker from the Atlanta Falcons. They brought him in, anticipate that he's going to get activated off of injured reserve and make his Browns debut against Baltimore, because them losing Anthony Walker for the season, torn quadriceps tendon on that Thursday night game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, really underestimated what a big blow that was. Certainly have a ton of respect for Anthony Walker. I just didn't realize he meant that much to the defense, because they ended up giving up 200 plus yards in rushing in back-to-back games. And then that night, after the Chargers game, Andrew Berry, boom, gets on the phone with the Falcons. It's like, we'll take Deion. Let's get him to Cleveland as soon as possible. And so he basically had his acclimation week last week, but I anticipate he's going to be out there. They signed a veteran nose tackle to the practice squad just to, again. So it, similar to what you're saying, maybe not as prominent of household names that might be in the twilight or sunset of their careers, like we see the Ravens adding to their roster. The Browns, same thing, man. they are constantly tweaking the back end of the roster and trying to add bodies to, I won't say fix some of these problems, but at least give the appearance that they're trying to address them or find some solutions. And maybe you throw enough mud against the wall in season, you get something that sticks for you.
Well, at least they're well run. Daryl Ryder is here. He is Right or Wrong Fan out in the land of Cleveland wearing his Guardians hat on the eve of what we thought was game five, what we believe to be game five. They think they're going to play game five. By the time you hear this, they'll either be in or they'll be out. It'll be like a Godfather 2 Friday afternoon. We can get to all that. I would say for where the division is right now, it's the strangest time, right? Like, we're all looking at Cincinnati as like, every time I see that kid play, I got a man crush on that kid. And I have no reason to like the Bengals or him or LSU. He just feels sort of John Elway-esque to me in sort of some good way that would be fun to watch. And I'm not anti-Lamar. Lamar's a great time to watch and like all that. But, you know, Roethlisberger, I respected him, but I didn't like him. And, right. You know, Tomlin, I like him, but I don't respect him. You know, but when it comes to this division and Hatfields and McCoys and me writing off the Steelers and the Browns a couple of weeks ago, and now, like, you start to think like maybe 9-8 would win this division, or maybe the Bengals will be that team. I don't think the Ravens can win 13 games or 12 games. I mean, I don't think the Ravens are capable of winning six in a row. And you may call me in December and I may eat those words because of their schedule. This team doesn't smell good to me. And, you know, when I think about bad things and deterioration of the Cleveland thing, does that smell any better to you? You love Stefanski, right?
Well, the bloom has fallen off that rose a little bit this here in the early part of the season. He's had some in-game decisions and in game plan decisions, most notably misusing Nick Chubb, who is the best running back in the National Football League to date this season. You know, he got 12 carries against the Patriots. He decided in his infinite wisdom that throwing the ball against Bill Belichick and having Jacoby Brissett put it in his hands was like the best course of action to beat the best coach of all time. And it blew up in his face spectacularly because Brissett threw two interceptions and fumbled another, and it cost the Browns 17 points. And then they muffed a punt on a punt return. And that cost him another touchdown. So 24 points off of four turnovers. Kevin Stefanski is on my hot seat. Let's just put it that way. I have a lot of respect
again?
For him.
Yeah. Not again.
I have a lot of respect for him, and I think he's one of the better coaches the Browns have had since 1999, but like, that's not saying a lot. Because they've had so many terrible coaches, and the franchise has just been mismanaged so much. What's most concerning with the Browns situation, Nestor, is they went all in on Deshaun Watson, giving up those three first round picks, six draft picks over 3 years in total. That's a lot of draft capital. And they're thinking it was that Deshaun is the missing piece. The quarterback's the missing piece. Now
they're not getting weapons of protection in the first round, giving your picks away.
Well, they got one of the best offensive lines in football. So they're good there. They got one of the best running backs. They got a good, great wide receiver. They're fine on the offensive side. It's the defense that's a train wreck right now. And, you know, they bet that this roster is okay. Like, they're fine. Like, you slide in Deshaun Watson and the Browns are going to be able to win 12 games and get into the playoffs and maybe make some noise in January. Well, now as I'm watching this team, like, I'm really concerned. Like, this thing can go south and south in a hurry. As we know in Cleveland, it happens so often. They're teetering on that cusp right now. They're 2-4. And if they lose to Baltimore and fall to 2-5, they got Cincinnati coming into town on Halloween night. This season could quickly turn into a nightmare. And that's not just a Halloween joke. That's a fact. So, you still got Tom Brady and Josh Allen on the schedule and Tua before you even get Deshaun Watson back on a field. So this season could be flushed before Deshaun Watson ever puts on a Browns uniform. That's where we are at right now when it comes to the Browns. If they don't win Sunday, the Ravens, for all intents and purposes, can do to the Browns what they've been doing to the Browns for well over two decades, and that's basically end their season on Sunday. Because the Browns are not built to come from behind on the scoreboard, and they certainly aren't going to be able to come from behind in the standings.
Daryl Ryder is here. He's doing all things in Cleveland. He has a new podcast. You can follow him at Right or Wrong Fan out on the Twitter thing as well. I will get to the baseball thing, I promise, but just stick in the football. Are your fans ready to root for this guy? Like, I mean, around here, just as an example of what this has done, right? And I go back to the owner's meetings where Pisciotti blew me off with 7 months ago. Your franchise goes all in, gives all this money. It's guaranteed. It's unprecedented. And
every owner in the NFL hates the Haslams right now.
Yes, but more so this particular owner who has this particular quarterback at this particular place and time representing himself in this particular offense, his uniqueness, his one of one, all of that.
He should get the Deshaun Watson contract. I'm not shy about it. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Lamar Jackson. I think it's somewhat disgusting, some of the narratives that have been out there about him as far as his inability to throw the football. Yeah, when he came into the league, it was a question, certainly, but he's answered those questions. And so I don't understand why that narrative still gets thrown out there. He is a franchise quarterback. He's won an MVP. He has taken his team to the playoffs. You guys were, you know, a couple of plays away from going deep into the playoffs. So he is deserving of a fully guaranteed $230 million contract. I agree with you. I am not going to sit here and defend the Browns acquisition of Deshaun Watson. If that's what you were looking for me to do, I'm not going to do it. I will explain it. I will give you the facts of the case or whatnot, but look, I'm not going to pat the Browns on the back for that type of move. In fact, I told you why I'm really concerned about that move, just from a team building standpoint. I think it could end up doing more harm than good. But when you're a desperate team like the Browns, who invested a first round pick in Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick in Baker Mayfield, and that did not work, right? You're desperate to find a quarterback since Bernie Kosar, going back to the late 80s, early 90s, when Bill Belichick cut him. These are the type of moves that desperate teams make. So I understand why the Browns did what they did. That, again, that doesn't mean that I'm patting them on the back and saying, hey, way to go, guys. Certainly what Deshaun Watson is accused of is disgusting and vile. I am not going to defend that either. But as his lawyers have been saying, he maintains his innocence and he's not been charged with a crime. Two grand juries elected not to prosecute him. This has all been civil accusations, civil lawsuits, whatnot. He settled 23 of them. He's now got two active. And by the time this airs, maybe that one goes away, because there is a deadline for this 26th accuser to refile her claims against him in court using her legal name. But yeah, I mean, it's the Browns.
The owners are kind of tone deaf, like really, really. Yes. Billionaire, yeah. Out to lunch.
But you know what?
Not to mention their own fraud issues and the other issues they have away from football.
Here's the thing,
right?
Though. And again, I'm not sitting here defending them. Don't misunderstand me. But let's be fair. Let's be fair about the situation. New Orleans was ready to line up to trade for Deshaun Watson. The Atlanta Falcons were ready to line up to trade for Deshaun Watson. The Carolina Panthers were ready to line up and trade for Deshaun Watson. There were other teams, my understanding, that they were willing, but they just didn't make it to that final grouping of actually getting to
sit. Miami would have taken him on it had they not had a situation. Right.
Well, had he resolved those lawsuits during last
Mark Davis season. Wouldn't have had any problem in Las Vegas. I mean, you know, if we're passing the scrutiny could you bring him in, front face him to your fan base, and sell tickets behind him? I don't think you could do it in Green Bay. I don't think you could do it in Kansas City. I think there's some places that would not have been considered, nor would the owner who went through Ray Rice and Jamal Lewis and Ray Lewis and had a dead kid from a fentanyl overdose that we're not supposed to talk about anymore, and Jalen Ferguson that happened here, you know, 4 months ago, right? So, like, these things that happen with bad news around players, with the drugs, NFL, violence, sex.
Yeah, the NFL guns. Is not the morality police league. Let's be honest about it. There have been a lot of things that have gone on involving players and misdeeds off the field, and unfortunately,
involving owners in Washington D.C.
Right?
They just get lawyers and don't go to jail. I mean, that's the end, right?
Right. And again, though, I mean, it's just my point is that while I understand the criticism that the Haslams have received for making that move, and certainly some of the comments that they made were just completely tone deaf. I will give you that. My point is that there were a dozen other NFL owners prepared to do exactly what the Haslam did. So I find it hypocritical to just put them up there and throw stones at them when there are so many others that would have done exactly the same thing. So I just want to be fair about the situation. Again, not defending it, not applauding it, whatever. It is what it is. But, you know, and it is a shame that all the negative stories are the ones that get the headlines, and nobody cares about all the good that so many other NFL players do. I mean, I go to a player going to a school to talk to kids, or giving away backpacks, or, you know,
turkey soon, right?
Winter coats or something, right? And I could write 1,000 words about that. And you know what? I'm lucky if 3 people read the story. But Deshaun Watson being accused of another act, you know, that gets thousands upon thousands upon thousands of clicks. I mean, that's just this, you know, that's just unfortunately what consumers consume. So I, you know, to your point, I'm sure that down in Baltimore, you have dealt with a lot of great guys, great players, great coaches, great front office people that do wonderful stuff to impact the local community. And even when you try and highlight that and shine a positive light on it, that's not what gets the clicks and the eyeballs and the ears. It's just when the bad stuff happens and then all the outrage comes out and whatnot. And look, Browns fans seem ready to embrace Deshaun as their quarterback. There have been some, I would say, lewd style clothing. Which I think is, but again, my opinion doesn't matter, right? I mean, it's not my place to tell people how to think and feel. But you know, it's just I'm just explaining the situation, kind of like painting the picture. But I do think that there needs to be some honesty when it comes to criticism, because it's easy to just hammer the Haslams for making that deal when there's a dozen other teams and fan bases that would have killed for their teams to do the same thing.
Well, big game this weekend here in Baltimore. Last thing, because, you know, here at the end, I mean, I could edit this out if they get beaten 14-1 in game 5. you know, for baseball, and I have fallen back in like with baseball this week in watching all the playoff games and having sort of a rooting interest for the Phillies, a little rooting interest for the Padres.
Orioles look competent this year. Let's give them the flowers. You know, they came close. They, you know, to go from losing 110 plus games to being on the periphery of the playoff picture in mid-September, that's certainly deserving of some praise. I think you guys might ultimately end up with the rookie of the year down there, beating out Stephen Kwan up here, who I think is a deserving candidate. I do think Terry Francona will win manager of the year just because he did have the youngest team in baseball. They did win 92 games. They did get to the postseason, whereas the Orioles, in spite of what a great story that was locally for you guys in Baltimore, that turnaround, they didn't get to the playoffs. And, you know, baseball writers tend to, you know, give the awards to those that have the tangible achievements. So the fact that Terry Francona with this team, they had 17 players this year, 17 Cleveland Guardians made their major league debut. I mean, you got guys that have 20 plate appearances, winning games with home runs and base hits and making key contributions. So what Terry,
I thought it was all about Frankie Lindor too, right?
No,
I mean, I thought when you let Frankie get away, how the hell are you going to win without Frank?
You know what? And this is, look, I think the Orioles fans and the folks in Baltimore can feel optimistic about their young team, but look, the Guardians / Indians over the years have put on a clinic how to run a small market baseball team with minimal payroll, similar to the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, since 1994, the Guardians / Indians have made the playoffs like 15 times. That's like once every other year. You know, sign me up for that. I'm not going to complain about that.
They certainly better than your dad did with the Indians from 54 on.
Right. So it's not been, you know, perfect, but I mean, Terry Francona, here's a stat for you. Since he's been a manager of the Indians / now Guardians, they have played a grand total of 19 games in which they have been mathematically eliminated from the postseason. How about that?
That's a
just 19 games in total.
I'll take that. You know
what I mean? Like,
right.
It's been incredible, this decade-long run that they've been on. Now, obviously, they've not won the ultimate prize, and unfortunately, success seems to be deemed in how many championships you win or if you even win a championship. But I think that regardless of the outcome and how their season ends this year, it's been a rousing success. I can't wait for next year. The minor league system is just absolutely loaded. Their minor league system total finished like 75 games above 500 combined. That's how loaded the Guardian system is. So if the Orioles are looking for a little offseason help, maybe give Mike Chernoff and Chris Antonetti a phone call.
Well, I would say, you know, Trader Mike will be at it because we've been saving all of our rubles here and, you know, ready to spend them out in the open market after Jordan Lyles. We figured.
Well, I'm sure that new $300 million Camden Yards ballpark renovation that's going to happen is going to, you know, lead to the checkbook getting open down there. And the Ravens are what, getting a $300+ million to fix up their stadium, which, by the way, it pains me to say this, but M&T Bank Stadium is one of my favorite stadiums in the National Football League. I wish Cleveland would have built something like that, except with a roof on it.
Something purple?
No, just the way that place is. No, it's just, it's very well laid out. It's a beautiful stadium. It's easily accessible. I mean, you can tell you guys invested the time to do it right, and you did. Whereas our place, God, our owners right now, you know, the Haslams, they're looking at their stadium options right now. Do they keep the current one and slap another $1 billion into that, or they tear it down and spend double that to put in a dome? Like, that's
the hell is wrong with your stadium?
Have you not seen that place? It's not a good stadium. I've
been in that stadium 20 times, 23 times, whatever, how many times we've been before Chad Steele threw me out. And I've never had a day where I've been there and I thought, this is a crappy stadium. Wrong guy. I go to stadiums every week. There's nothing wrong with your stadium.
It's a terrible stadium. Trust me. It's a terrible stadium. You can't take a stairwell to the service level. There are not enough elevators in the place.
For crying out loud, you're there. I have been in the service elevator in your stadium. I have ridden down with salad. I have.
They only have half a service level. The other problem too is, and this is something the Ravens are going to, you're seeing all these field level clubs being put in and stuff like that. The Browns can't do that in that stadium because of the way it's built. So all these extra things to keep the stadium current.
Oh, God, you're lucky to have a team. We took the last one, for crying out loud. Be happy with your stadium. Ain't a damn thing. What are you, from Dallas or so? You need another baseball ballpark too? Your team play the Yankees, all right? Good luck to you.
Progressive Field, by the way, is getting a $400 million facelift too.
I still call it the Jake, you know, what do I know?
Yeah, I'm hoping the facelift doesn't ruin the original architecture of the ballpark. Even though I hate that Mount Baltimore that they put in, the one thing that I credit the Orioles with doing is maintaining the beautiful architecture of that park. And it feels like, you know, when it, what, 92 it opened? It still feels like.
Dude, I remember going downtown and you were just a little puppy on my lap and you had the mistake on the lake and the Marlboro sign out in center field and you had grass growing up through the infield and you had dirt growing up through the grass and you had to go to Richfield and sit in traffic to. Dude, come on.
Well, like I said, a lot of improvement is needed on the lake. Both
the rock and roll capital of the world, Ryder. Come on. You're not in Cincinnati. You're in Cleveland.
You're not telling me anything I don't know.
I love you, man. Good luck. And we'll have fun. And good luck with your new podcast. Right or Wrong Fans, the way to find him. He will be drinking heavily this weekend in peace if the Guardians are eliminated. And probably out in the street whooping it up, drinking in happiness and enjoy if they are headed off to. Hey, I'll tell you one thing. What get me behind the Guardians is playing the Astros, because no one likes those SOBs. So there you go. Everybody be behind Cleveland if we get an opportunity to do that. And I don't know, between the Yankees and the Astros, I might just put smooth jazz on and wait for spring training. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.